Chapter 1, To the End of Formal Worship. A very young boy, Gadadhar Chatterjee, was walking on the high bulk of a rice field near his village home in Bengal. Little did he know that he was about to experience samadhi, God consciousness, the state which was to become his natural habitat in maturity. The boy's age exactly is difficult to know, for Sri Ramakrishna, as he was later known, once said that he was 6 or 7 years old, whereas it is recorded in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna that he was 10 or 11. It was on the morning of a day in June or July, before the monsoon season. As was the custom in villages like Kamarpukur, the boy had taken with him for refreshment parched rice in a small basket, from which he had begun to eat. A large black rain cloud began to roll and gather until it had filled the entire horizon. Across this black cloud suddenly flew a flock of white cranes. The beauty of this contrast was overpowering to the sensitive nature of the boy, and down he fell, absorbed in an extraordinary mood, scattering his rice grains to the ground. Later he came to know from others that he had been unconscious, as they say, and his body motionless. There are certain characteristics of God vision, he once said about it. One sees light, feels joy, and experiences the upsurge of a great current in one's chest, like the bursting of a rocket. Near the end of his life, the Master told those around him, "Since that day, I have been an altogether different man. I began to see another person within me." This first ecstasy brings to our mind the interesting question of the relation between aesthetic experiences and mystical ones. While on the one hand it indicates the power of man's emotional nature to stimulate and participate in divine beatitude, on the other hand, in its quality and its depth, it is an eye-opener to shallow romanticism, which may be prone to see immortality in every passing tear shed in the name of beauty. About 2 miles to the north of Kamarpukur lies the village of Anur. Here, in a field, the goddess Vishalakshi is said to dwell. Unsheltered and wearing no human form, her living presence is felt, however, in a simple mound of earth, about 2 feet wide and 4 feet long, painted red at one end. The story told of this unusual goddess is this. She gives away to the cowherd boys of the village the coin offerings left by pilgrims. The boys are thus able to entertain themselves with sweets. And for this reason, every attempt which has been made to enclose the goddess in a structure and formalize her worship has been mysteriously frustrated. When he was about 8 years old, or by one account 10 or 11, the young Ramakrishna accompanied a party of women of Kamarpukur, his village, on a morning pilgrimage to Anur to visit Vishalakshi. Gadadhar was helping to pass the time en route by singing the many songs that he knew. Suddenly, the sweet voice was silent. His body and limbs grew stiff, and there was a constant flow of tears from his eyes. The ladies of the party did not understand it. They thought him overcome by the heat. but all their cries and splashing of water upon his face were fruitless in restoring his external consciousness. Only when Prasanna, a woman wiser than the rest, thought to call into his ear the name of the goddess on whom his mind had been intent, did the boy slowly regain his normal awareness and behavior. Much later, about this, he said, "What a vision! I became completely unconscious of the outer world." Unfortunately, this is the only sentence we now have from him. Perhaps this was his very first vision of the Divine Mother. Did he see her form? We do not know. About the oft-told incident in which Gadadhar was borrowed by the manager of an acting troupe to be a stand-in for the part of Lord Shiva, we know all the external circumstances. It was the first watch of the long night devoted to the worship of Shiva, Shivaratri, and a drama arranged to help the villagers keep vigil was endangered by the illness of one of the actors. Young Gadai was meditating on the great Lord when friends arrived and persuaded him to assume the role. With slow steps, he appeared before the eager audience. But at some point, he had already gone into ecstasy. The radiance of his face shone through a flood of tears, the only sign of life in a body which was rigid as a statue. In the life of Sri Ramakrishna, there is this passage. The boy had completely lost himself in the divine glory of Shiva. His mind, in its transcendental flight, transported him into a region of calmness and serenity, as immutable as the Lord Shiva himself. The different phases of the great glory of Mahadeva, the God of gods, appeared before his mind's eye. Calm, sweet, self-forgetful, and oblivious of the pains and pleasures of the world, the great God appeared before him as the ideal of serene contemplativeness, immersed in samadhi for the sake of the world's welfare. But whether the Master ever gave such a description is in doubt. The effect on the audience was galvanizing, causing shouts of "Bravo!" which never reached their destination because Sri Ramakrishna remained unconscious throughout the night. After this event, such trances became more frequent. Swami Sharadananda tells us that after the boy received his sacred thread, given usually at the age of 8, he had occasional visions and samadhi during worship. Rehearsing other dramas later, he often experienced ecstasy. Gadadhar, at the age of 16, left his village home to come to Calcutta, where he was to study under his elder brother Ram Kumar and assist him in performing worship in the pious homes of the city. Other than the fact that he resented and neglected the education for a life in the world, Sri Ramakrishna has left little record of his inner life of these 3 years. We must therefore shift our scene to the Dakshineshwar temple garden, built by Rani Rashmani on the bank of the Ganges, about 4 miles north of the heart of the city. It was in this Kali temple of this compound that Ram Kumar had accepted a permanent appointment, and in the middle of 1855, Ramakrishna accepted, after much persuasion, the office of assistant in the priestly duties. he came to be known in the temple precincts as the junior Bhattacharya, or priest. His actual performance of worship began not in the temple of Kali, but in that of Radhakanta, Sri Krishna, that is, which makes it seem likely that it was here that the actual letters of the mantras, which as priest he had to repeat, appeared to Sri Ramakrishna in bright colors, set in his body at different points, just as we find them in tantric diagrams. At one point in the worship, when the worshipper must sprinkle water in a circle around him with the mantra Rung, symbolizing a protecting wall of fire, the master saw hundreds of tongues of fire from this wall around the worship seats. He said that he actually saw the kundalini going up in the form of a snake through the sushumna to the sahasrara at the top of the head. He felt that the parts of his body left behind by that power in its upward movement became still, insensitive, and dead, as it were. It must have been an arresting sight to see him performing worship. Hride, his nephew and companion, described him as becoming so absorbed that he would not know if anyone came near or spoke to him. The junior Bhattacharya soon exchanged places with his brother and was appointed priest of the Kali temple. The whole current of his mind now began to flow toward God as the Divine Mother. The madness to certify for himself the reality of God had begun. Once, in the agony of his restlessness, he vowed to the Divine Mother that he would kill himself if he did not see God. But the Mother did not yet reply to his call, and what Sri Ramakrishna vowed in word, he did not fail to make good in deed. At the peak of his longing, he felt, quote, as if someone had hold of my heart and mind and was wringing them like a wet towel. Afflicted with the thought that I might never have Mother's vision, I thought there was then no use in living this life. My eyes fell upon the sword on the wall of the Mother's temple. I made up my mind to end my life that very moment, and like one mad, I ran and caught hold of it, when suddenly I had the wonderful vision of the Mother and fell down unconscious. I did not know what happened then in the external world, how that day and the next slipped away. But in my heart of hearts, there was flowing a current of intense bliss never experienced before, and I had the immediate knowledge of the light that was Mother. End of quote. Whether he saw one of the anthropomorphic forms of the Mother on this occasion is not certain. Swami Sharadananda suspects that he did, because the plaintive cry, Mother, was coming from his lips as he regained consciousness. However, in the foregoing quotation there is no mention of it, nor in the following detailed account of this vision, which the Master has left us. Quote, it was as if houses, doors, temples, and everything else had vanished from my sight, leaving no trace whatsoever. However far and in whatever direction I looked, I saw a continuous succession of effulgent waves madly rushing at me from all sides with great speed. I was caught in the rush. Panting for breath, I collapsed unconscious. End of quote. This vision, dramatic as it was, did not satiate him. On the contrary, it sharpened his longing for the constant vision of the mother's spiritual form. He became unfit for any work for some days. Sometimes he would fall to the ground in agony, beseeching the mother with pitiful cries to grant him her grace. When the curious or the sympathetic would gather round, he said they appeared unreal, like shadows or pictures painted on canvas, and hence the mind felt not the slightest touch of shame or hesitation. But as soon as he lost consciousness on account of unbearable anguish, he saw that form of the mother consisting of consciousness, with hands that give boons and freedom from fear, the form that smiled and spoke, consoled and taught him in endless ways. In his later life, when devotees and disciples came to him, he liked to tell them the story of another aspirant whose teacher forced him underwater until he was dying for a breath, to illustrate this kind of longing for the vision of God. An example of the way the mother responded by giving him instruction is to be seen on the occasion when he said to her, "Oh, mother, I am a fool. Please teach me what is contained in the Vedas, the Puranas, the Tantras, and the other scriptures." The mother said to him, "The essence of the Vedanta is that Brahman alone is real and the world illusory." His heart was stirred to a profound and now famous prayer. "After my vision of the Divine Mother," he relates, "I prayed to her, taking a flower in my hands. 'Mother, here is thy knowledge, and here is thine ignorance. Take them both, and give me only pure love. Here is thy holiness, and here is thine unholiness. Take them both, Mother, and give me pure love. Here is thy good, and here is thine evil. Take them both, Mother, and give me pure love. Here is thy righteousness, and here is thine unrighteousness. Take them both, Mother, and give me pure love.' I mentioned all these, but I could not say, 'Mother, here is thy truth, and here is thy falsehood. Take them both.' I gave up everything at her feet, but could not bring myself to give up truth." What he would dictate to his mind, the mind would obey from its very depths. At this period, when he sat for meditation, having told the mind with firmness to meditate, he would hear a clicking sound in the joints of his body, starting in the legs and going up to the head. It was as if an unseen power were turning the keys of locks to fix him in his posture. Only when he felt that unlocking again in the reverse order could he move from his position and leave his seat. Now the experiences described in the texts on yoga began to show themselves. Sometimes he saw the universe filled with sparks of fire, like fireflies. Sometimes all the quarters glittered with light as if the world were a lake of mercury or a lake of liquid silver. Again, he would see the world lit up as if with the light of Roman candles. "It was revealed to me further," he said, that God Himself has become the universe and all its living beings and the 24 cosmic principles. The elements of the cosmology of the Sankhya philosophy. It is like a process of evolution and involution. I saw these things sometimes with my eyes shut and sometimes open. I did not understand what I saw, nor did I know whether it was good or bad to have such visions. I therefore prayed to Mother with a troubled heart. I don't understand, Mother, what is happening to me. Mother, if you do not teach me, who else will? I have no other refuge. Oh, what a state God kept me in at that time. One experience would hardly be over before another overcame me. It was like the movement of the husking machine. No sooner is one end down than the other goes up. I would see God in meditation, in the state of samadhi, and I would see the same God when my mind came back to the outer world. When looking at this side of the mirror, I would see Him alone, and when looking on the reverse side, I saw the same God. When the Master was again able to perform the rituals of worship, these began to take a most unorthodox form. Sometimes, when he intended to offer the Mother a flower, he found his hand coming round his own head and placing the flower there. One day, the temple employees were in a ferment. The junior Bhattacharya had been seen to feed a cat with the food offering for the Divine Mother. Mathur Babu, the temple proprietor, must be notified at once. Meanwhile, in the Kali temple, the Master was seeing everything, full of consciousness, as the embodiment of spirit. The image was consciousness, the altar was consciousness. The worship utensils were consciousness, the door sill, the marble floor, he himself, all consciousness. He says, I found everything inside the room soaked, as it were, in bliss, the bliss of Satchidananda. I saw a wicked man in front of the Kali temple, but in him also I saw the power of the Divine Mother vibrating. That was why I fed a cat with the food that was to be offered to the Divine Mother, saying, Wilt thou take it, Mother? I clearly perceived that the Divine Mother herself had become everything, even the cat. End of quote. It was an experience of great significance in the spiritual life of Sri Ramakrishna. For so far as we know, it is the first occasion on which he was totally possessed by the God without, as well as the God within. As we have seen, the Master had often been wrapped in ecstatic contemplation, absorbed in that aspect of the Divine Mother which is seen inside, in vision, removed from all waking consciousness. But from this point begins that other thread which, as will be seen, weaves across the first to make up the fabric of his spiritual life, and that is the God immanent in the universe, visible all around to the sight which is purified. Here was the Divine Mother, instinct in every visible form, in man, in beast, temple, image. This all-encompassing revelation, it may be said, establishes him firmly as the modern receptacle and reflector of India's Sanatana Dharma, the eternal monistic gospel of the Upanishads, that all this is verily Brahman. Now his relationship with the mother began to deepen. Changes which took place could be likened to those we see when a great artist's sketch cartoon is converted into the colorful, delineated painting. Where previously in vision he would see a hand or a foot or the face of the Divine Mother, now he saw her full figure, smiling, talking. Where he used to see a beam of light from her eyes touching upon the food offering, now he saw her actually eat the food. Where he had been seeing the living presence in the image, now he saw no image. He saw the Divine Mother herself, all consciousness. Quote, I put the palm of my hand near her nostrils and felt that Mother was actually breathing. I observed very closely but could never see the shadow of the Mother's divine person on the temple wall in the light of the lamp at night. I heard from my room that Mother, merry like a little girl, was going upstairs, her anklets making jingling sounds. I came up to test it and found that she, with hair disheveled, was actually standing on the veranda of the upper floor of the temple, looking now at Calcutta, now at the Ganga. The master tells us that he would go into samadhi, uttering the word Ma, touching heaven and hell with his jaws, as it were, that this utterance drew the Mother of the Universe to him, like fishermen drawing in the catch with their nets. Even the most exalted soul taking human birth must undergo the limitations of a human body. Sri Ramakrishna was no exception to this, although the capacity of his pure physique to withstand the tempests of divine emotion was far greater than that of ordinary aspirants. But his physical condition began to deteriorate from this time, and various disturbing symptoms began to manifest themselves. One of these was a burning sensation all over the body, which he had from the beginning of his sadhana, and which recurred several times in his life. This first torment lasted for 6 months, the sensation becoming unbearable until it culminated in another vision. This time it was the realization of the truth embodied in another of the functions of the daily worship. The worshipper is to visualize the Papa Purusha, the embodiment of sin, as it is called, as a kind of demon with dark skin and red eyes existing in his own heart. He proceeds to rout him from his heart as an act of self-purification and to strike him dead. Hundreds of thousands of worshippers have gone through this step of the ritual since its origin long centuries ago. But Sri Ramakrishna, sitting in the Panchavati, the grove of trees of the temple garden, during worship actually saw the Papa Purusha come reeling drunkenly out of his body and walk before him. At once another figure dressed in Garuda robe, perhaps the young sannyasin of many later visions, of tranquil face and holding a trident, came out and put an end to that hideous figure. We do not know if this scene took place before the master's open eyes or in vision with eyes closed, either being quite possible in this case, but the burning pain was lessened for some time thereafter. It was now 1858. One morning, the young priest, by now considered inspired, crazy, or eccentric, according to one's point of view, went about the worship of Kali in his usual, or rather unusual, way. But today, everything was extraordinary. Let us hear his own words. Formal worship drops away after the vision of God. It was thus that my worship in the temple came to an end. I used to worship the deity in the Kali temple. It was suddenly revealed to me that everything is pure spirit. The utensils of worship, the altar, the door frame, all pure spirit. Men, animals, and other living beings, all pure spirit. Then, like a madman, I began to shower flowers in all directions. Whatever I saw, I worshipped. Another day, while worshipping Shiva in one of the Shiva temples of the garden, I was about to offer a bay leaf on the head of the image, when it was revealed to me that this Virat, this universe itself, is Shiva. After that, my worship of Shiva through the image came to an end. Another day, I had been picking the worship flowers when it was revealed to me that the flowering plants themselves were so many bouquets on the universal body. Sri Ramakrishna now informed Mathur Babu that the mother had said to him she would accept Hridoy's worship in the same manner as she had accepted his own.